Welcome to Gruesome, your horrific true crime podcast. I'm Connie, along with my own personal therapist, Meg. This is episode 53, part one. And we're going to destroy you guys for a few hours talking about Israel Keyes.
Yes, we have been leaning on each other hard for that therapy lately. Woo! We're going to need more of it after we talk through this.
And I want to preface this with, I understand this is a big, like, he is a big dog in the true crime world. We know that you're going to find information other places that go into, like, crazy, crazy detail. This is two episodes about him. We cannot cover every single thing about him. We would be here forever.
We'd have a season.
Yeah.
An Israel Keyes season.
I will just kind of, we don't usually plug other podcasts very much, but there is, if you are looking for a deep dive into what every single detail, every single interview, everything about him that spans like four seasons like of episodes. The podcast True Crime Bullshit, he is like an investigative journalist. He is the person with Israel Keyes. He studied his computer. Like, it's insane. So I know I've read like other reviews about people who have covered him, and they're always like, go to this podcast if you want to know all about him. So I'm just telling you ahead of time. Like, I
go to that other one if you need more than what we can give you.
Yeah, because honestly, I can't think about what this guy did for four seasons.
Episode after episode. Yeah, just these ones are pretty gnarly. Let's do it, I guess.
Yeah.
On Thursday, June 8th, 2011, Bill and Lorraine Currier both left work at 5 o'clock. They had a long day. They were headed home. It was a Thursday, so they had to be back the next day for TGIF. Bill was an animal care tech at the University of Vermont, and Lorraine worked at Fletcher Allen Healthcare. She was in the financial services department. When Friday rolled around, Lorraine's coworkers were surprised when she didn't show up. So surprised that they called Bill's work. And Bill hadn't shown up either. And these were the kind of people who were no call, no show. They were, being MIA was extremely out of character for them. Those who knew 49-year-old Bill and 55-year-old Lorraine were concerned, and police were dispatched to their home in Essex, Vermont to do a welfare check. Their little house was located on a quiet neighborhood street. It was nestled between their neighbors. They had a white picket fence. When police arrived to do that welfare check, they found all of the doors locked. However, the door that connected the house to the garage had been broken, and the phone line had been cut. Set a pretty ominous tone.
Yeah, that's never... Those are never good things to find.
Yeah, with no trace of Bill and Lorraine. The police also found that Lorraine's medication that she was required to take daily had been left behind. Strangely, their cell phones and bank accounts had not been accessed since they had gone missing. That same Friday, their green 1996 Saturn was found abandoned next to a dumpster between two apartment buildings less than 1 mile away from their homes. The couriers had disappeared without a trace. Foul play was suspected, but no one could understand why anyone would want to hurt this quiet couple. Bill's sister released a statement after they disappeared saying, "Bill and Lorraine Currier are kind and caring people, beloved members of our families. We are heartbroken by their disappearance and at a loss to explain or understand it. Bill and Lorraine, if you can hear this, know that we love you and we're doing everything we know how to do to find you and bring you home." The only evidence came from a witness who believed that they had seen a man that wasn't Bill driving the courier's green car. A suspect sketch was released, but no one would know anything about what had happened to the couriers for more than a year. When a man across the country would finally confess to their murder.
I think to myself sometimes, if I just didn't show up for work and like didn't call, didn't text anything.
Like, would they be like, something's wrong?
They'd probably be like, damn it, Connie. Like,
they would be like, no, this is fine. She'll be back tomorrow.
She'll be back.
It'll be a couple of days before they're like, maybe something's up.
There would be, and like, honestly, now that I think about it, I'm having an internal panic attack right now because I realize I ghost text messages so often. I am screwed if I ever come up missing because no one is going to know except for my husband when I'm not here to put my daughter to bed.
Like, wow, she really didn't come home late. She must, you know what? I bet she's still at work.
But if it's like a situation where my entire family is taken, you'd just be like, oh, Connie's having a hard day. She'll text tomorrow.
If you didn't text me for a whole day, like a full 24 hours, and I like tried to talk to you, then I would text your husband, or I'd make my husband text your husband. And if he didn't text, then I would be like, I'd probably like Facebook message like your in-laws or something. And be like,
welfare,
hey,
check.
Can you go see what's going on over there?
But I've looked at text messages before where I'm like, oh crap, they text me like 3 days ago. I need to get back to this.
It's the curse. It's the curse of being a working mother. So, who admitted to this
who
murder?
Done it across the country? Across sounds the like country. A movie.
All the way across the country in
yeah,
Alaska.
Yeah, like not like...
like Vermont to Alaska. That's opposite ends of the spectrum. Of the American spectrum. Israel Keyes was born in Cove, Utah on January 7th, 1978. Capricorn. Just saying. Just saying. He was the second born of 10 children. All of the Keyes children were born at home and delivered by their dad. Israel's dad hated doctors. He hated modern medicine. Hospitals had too many rules. If you asked Israel Keyes about his childhood, he would tell you that he was raised Amish, which was not true. While none of the Keyes children had social security numbers or birth certificates, it was more due to their parents' distrust in the government in general. Mm-hmm. Initially, his mother Heidi and father Jeff were Mormon. They had met as teenagers, they were married when they were 21 and 22, and the couple wanted to raise their children in the wilderness. They just wanted to get away from modern society. They lived in Utah until one of their neighbors became concerned about Israel and his older sister America, and they called child services. Enraged by the government prying into their lives, the Keys bought 160 acres near a national forest in Colville, Washington. They moved into a one-room cabin with no electricity, no plumbing, no running water, and they lived there for 7 years. The children lacked... nope, yeah. There was no TV, there was no radio, I mean, there was no toilet, so there wasn't any general contact with anyone that wasn't their immediate family. But they had plenty to do because their parents used them for labor. They were chopping down trees, they were farming and babysitting each other. Israel was the oldest boy, so he was the man of the house when his dad was away. The family left Mormonism, but continued their extreme lifestyle. There was no medicine. There weren't enough clothes. There was no room in their cabin. In the spring and summer months, the older kids lived in a tent outside of their one-room cabin. And in the winter, Heidi took the kids to live in Jeff's mom's trailer in Palm Springs, California. Side note, I looked at trailers in Palm Springs, California, and they still cost like $1 million right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I was like, that's
still probably.
It's not nice. Like a Hartford City, Indiana trailer park.
When Israel was 12, his family started attending a white supremacist, anti-Semitic, militia-based church called the Ark. And the Ark could also have its own episode.
I was going to say that. Actually, at some point, it probably will.
Yeah, they I didn't go into detail about it, but it is dramatic. If you want to Google Ark and Siege, and it will come up.
Aren't they linked to like some of the manifestos to like the Oklahoma City bombing and like stuff like that?
I don't have a confident answer for you on that.
I feel like that.
All I know is that I'm sure really stand up human beings attend this church.
Two of the people that went, like two of the boys that Keys grew up with, grew up to also be murderers.
Yes, Chevy and Shane Kehoe. Yeah. Those were his first friends that weren't his siblings.
Can you imagine like
what the hell is happening in this part of of the woods?
To my mom, and you thought like us wearing two short skirts and fishnet stockings and tube socks.
Oh, could be worse. Could have been stealing guns, which is what they were doing. The Kehoes were also homeschooled. Their family lived off the grid because their dad was preparing for a race war, what he believed would be an inevitable race war. And when you're preparing for war, you stockpile guns. And these kids knew about guns, which was exciting to Israel because he had spent his entire childhood obsessed with them. For most of his life, his grandfather had given him one and taught him to shoot, but any like gun and ammo magazine he could find, he would read them cover to cover and memorize everything about every gun on the pages. And the Kehoe brothers didn't just like guns. They stole them, they sold them, they shot them, they hid them in other places to shoot later, and they taught Israel how to steal them and sell them too. He started breaking into homes with his friends and his younger sister in order to steal guns. And when they had stolen enough, they would go to swap meets and sell them off. And why no one thought like a 13-year-old boy selling like a litany of guns was a red flag is beyond me. It's the 80s.
Yeah, I think of, have you watched Euphoria?
I haven't yet, no.
There is a kid in there that's like a drug dealer, and he's like a teenager, like a young baby-faced teenager. And like no one questions. Like no one's questions. Like,
where'd you get this stuff? No, don't question. You want it or not?
That's probably how it was.
It probably was, yeah. So he wasn't just stealing guns. Sometimes he and his sister would break into houses and they would just move shit around and then hide, wait for the owners to come home and like watch them freak out.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, that's scary.
That's terrifying.
He and his little sister would scare animals. They would start fires. But his sister also couldn't keep a secret. He stopped doing things with her because she told people. She told their friends, and their friends would tell their parents, who told Israel and Charity's parents. You know, the grapevine just goes down the off the grid grapevine.
Like, hey, what's up?
Mm-hmm. By the time he was 14, he had stopped hanging out with pretty much any other kids because, a specific instance, he had shot an animal in front of one of them, and in Israel's words, he couldn't handle it. The kid couldn't handle it that had seen him do it. He decided he was better off alone and realized how unlike other kids he was when he told his sister that he's going to kill her cat. He's like, I'm going to kill your cat. Got in the trash. So he grabbed the cat. She and a few of other kids their age followed him into the woods. And in the woods, he tied the cat to a tree, shot it with a revolver, and the cat ran around and started throwing up. The kids were horrified. One of the kids vomited, and that kid went home and told his dad, who alerted Israel's parents. But he didn't really understand what he didn't get it, like why it was such a big deal. He didn't realize that what he was doing was wrong. Or
if you're new here, if you torture animals.
There's just like such a clear cut path to like psychopath serial killer tendencies. It's like, oh yeah, I started fires. Now I kill small animals. Now I do this. And this is, it keeps going. So at 16, Israel had watched his dad build his family a house over the last 7 years, like chopping down the trees, building this house from his own hands. So at 16, Israel built his own one-room cabin, and against his mother's wishes, he moved into it. He became obsessed with hunting. Not just hunting, he could dress and butcher a deer and had killed enough deer that he could feed his whole family and himself. And eventually, he began to realize that this skill he had learned while hunting could translate into other entertainment. He loved being camouflaged and stalking people through the woods, knowing that they couldn't see him. And he would just watch people for hours, which is like the scariest thing
I've ever heard. That is another reason
why. Can you imagine just like going hiking and there's just someone? And I'll never not be able to think of that's why we don't hike.
Yeah, that's exactly like Israel Keys and the national park people are why I don't hike.
That's why we can't. Sorry. So he moved into this cabin and he pretty quickly after that, he's arrested for shoplifting. He was a minor. So they're like, you get community service. But his parents go through his cabin and they found a whole mess of stolen guns. So they force him to move home. This is the new home that his dad had built for 7 years. It's finally completed. And they made him return all of the stolen guns and come home to work, which infuriated this boy. His parents encouraged him to hunt, and that was illegal. They didn't tell him to get a license to follow the rules of hunting in that area. They just told him to hunt for their food. His parents encouraged all of their children to reject the government. What made stealing so bad that he was being punished for it? Why is some stuff okay?
Which I am not here to defend him, but I understand that.
And especially as a like 16-year-old kid, you know?
Yeah, like if you're a
16- How come you guys tell me I can break the law and do this stuff, but I can't break the law and do that
stuff? Yeah, I absolutely, like, that's a blurred line that, like, I would... like, would understandably be difficult to for a teenager.
Yeah. But as we know, he takes it one step too far. Shortly after this, Israel's around 18. He declares to his parents that he no longer believes in God. And his dad disowned him, but his mom would not. They find out that he is dating a girl. He was working construction and he hit it off with the boss's daughter. So he's dating her. He really likes her. And his parents pretty much told him that he couldn't see her anymore, that he could write her letters. And that was it. And this is 1996. So he's 18, 1996. His parents are like, no, you can't date. You can just write her letters. Which this is a man now. Like, this is an adult.
Yeah, it's not. He's not in middle school.
That same year in the town that Israel and his family lived near, a little girl went missing. Julie Harris was 12 years old and a double amputee and a Special Olympics gold medalist. On March 3rd, 1996, Julie left the house and was never heard from again. The only clue of her disappearance was that a witness said that they saw Julie with a tall man in a trench coat. Israel Keys was 6 feet tall when he was 14 years old.
Yeah, he's
a tall dude. 1 month after she was reported missing, Julie's prosthetic feet washed up on the shore of the Colville River. The next year, in 1997, her remains were found in the woods, by a group of children who had been out playing. That year, in 97, Cassie Emerson, also 12 years old, was also reported missing. Her mother, Marlene, was found dead inside of their trailer after it had been intentionally burned down, but Cassie was nowhere to be found. Her remains were found in April of 1998 in the woods, only a 13-minute drive from Colville. Her body was decomposed and it had been torn apart by animals. Police believed that the same person was responsible for all three murders, Julie, Cassie, and Cassie's mother, Maureen. Within the year, Jeff and Heidi Keys decided that they needed to move again due to the fact that Israel and two of his sisters had begun to seriously rebel against their parents. The family packed up and moved to Maupin, Oregon, and the mysterious murders in Colville, Washington stopped.
How suspicious.
So weird. Israel didn't want to go, but he didn't have a choice. His mother treated him more like her partner than her son. His dad wasn't present. He was always working. She and his dad expected him to help parent the younger kids, and he felt like they were controlling his life. In Oregon, Israel helped his dad build another house while the family lived in tents, homeless, with little to no food. They built that house and then they sold it and immediately moved again. This time to New York. Just like building these houses. I'm guessing just to make money, you build them and move and build them and move. But that was part of their lifestyle, that they didn't need material things. That was like one of their core family values.
Mm-hmm.
His dad had bought a small, barely functioning farmhouse in New York on 10 acres of land. And he signed it over to Israel less than a year later because the family moved again to Maine to live among the Amish. He stayed behind in New York and he opted to enroll in classes to get his GED so he could join the military, which he did. He didn't even have a social security number or a birth certificate, and he was able to join the military.
That's weird.
Right. Like, maybe it's not.
Maybe it's not weird. Maybe I don't. Maybe he had I don't know. I don't know how that works. Now I'm questioning everything.
So that's what I have up to his military service.
And he was.
He was good in the military. He was a good soldier.
Yeah, he had no, like, there was, like, no issues. He didn't have any, you know.
Nope. He really thrived on that structure that he felt like he didn't have as a kid.
Oh, I think we see that a lot in serial killers or, like, murderers who, like, started in the military. It either goes one of two ways.
Really well or really bad.
Yes, absolutely. And so you have this man, and you guys are, if you've never heard of Israel Keyes, which I'll be honest, if you are a true crime connoisseur, you know Israel Keyes. If you're like just starting out or like you haven't like done any deep dives, he was so meticulous. And we always hate to say, he was brilliant, like absolutely brilliant in all aspects of his life. And like Meg had described, he knew how to live off the grid. He knew how to
He had been trained. He had been trained as a survivalist pretty much. And he could read anything and pick it up by reading. He wasn't great at math, but he was really he could learn pretty much anything just from reading it.
And so he gets out of the military and he comes back and you're like, why is this random arsonist, possible murderer from all over? Like, what was he doing? So he starts, and this is so insane. And this is the part of Israel Keyes that is terrifying to me. He moved back to out west. He had stable relationships. You see a lot of serial killers and you see a lot of murderers who have facades. They had a wife, it wasn't a good marriage, or, you know, they weren't close with their kids. They couldn't maintain long-term friendships, but he did. The guys he served with loved him. His friends loved him. He had a long-term girlfriend. Her name was Tammy. He had a daughter that he, by all accounts, and I'll talk about it a little bit in episode two as well, he loved his daughter. And I don't think there's any debating that. Like, he loved his daughter.
I think he did love his daughter, but he also, you can see when that facade starts to crack, because he leaves Tammy and he finds this other woman on a dating site. And this is in 2012. This is recent, I guess. To me, it's recent. I realize that 2012 was 10 years ago now, but but he leaves her, and
And Kimberly had his girlfriend that he had up until the end. Kimberly was, by all accounts, the perfect woman for him. She was strong. She was fiercely independent. She had a job that where she would work remotely from, like, the home base, like, most of the year. She traveled a lot. So he had free reign, like, to kind of do whatever he wanted. And it worked for them. Like, she was, Kimberly was close with his daughter.
Yeah, but he did leave his daughter. He left her with Tammy when he went to Alaska.
But she came to Alaska.
Like, she did eventually because Tammy has some problems.
Some issues.
Yeah.
So he starts by flying all over. And like I said, he kind of had free reign. Kimberly was away for work. She had travel miles. She had a good job. Like, and he made good money. He was a construction worker. He had a boat, like, before they moved to Alaska, like, he had a boat, which is, like, also terrifying to think about.
Yes.
But he would travel, just book flights, and then he would rent cars. He would bring these cars back. Sometimes they had a couple hundred miles on them. Sometimes, like, over 3 days, he'd put, like, thousands of miles on these cars. And then he'd fly back. He'd fly into one airport, change his flight that same exact day, like right before it boarded, fly somewhere else. And what he was doing at first was he would fly to these places and he would use his survivalist skills. He was burying kill kits across the country, not just like this. And what he had, Drano to help with body decomposition. He had these zip ties,
bats, silencers,
like all of these things. And he would be going all over the place, buried like all. And when I say this, I'm like literally meaning, guys, all over the damn country.
Yes. Like, we probably have, they're out there still.
Yes, absolutely. There is a tip line set up to where if you find one of these kill kits, who you're supposed to call. And so he would bury these kill kits and then he would just leave.
Or camouflage them. He would set them up in mm-hmm. rocks or around reservoirs, just wherever he could. So he would remember, because he never kept a record of where he hid them. He just kept them in memory.
Yeah.
I've got one here.
And so he has all of these. He didn't talk to locals. He'd fly in. He'd not talk to anyone. And then he wouldn't pick a victim. Like, it's not like he would fly in and be like, I saw this girl 2 years ago. She's my victim. They were all crimes of opportunity. He would pick a place. And then he would just fly back out again.
And yep. He had no specific... Initially, they didn't have an MO on him. They could never track him because he didn't target the same people. A lot of times with serial killers, they target, you know, like petite brunettes, like tall males.
Yep.
Specific. They have a type. And Israel Keys did not have a type.
And this went on for years. We'll talk about that more in like part two of this. But this went on for literal years. He would fly in, bury a kill kit, go back home, decide, that's what I'm going to use. And he would fly to, like, in one instance, which I'm sure you can guess, like, the case. He flew to Chicago, and from Chicago, he drove to Vermont.
Actually, he went from... So he flew from Anchorage to Washington, to Seattle.
Yeah.
From Seattle to Chicago. And then he drove from Chicago to Indiana, and then Indiana to New York, and then New York to Vermont, and then Vermont to Maine in one trip.
Yeah.
And then back. When he was done, he drove back and then flew back.
And so how do you – like, you have this guy who – he is so meticulous, so calculated, so cold, but he literally has a double life. So if to Kimberly, he's just like flying over, you know, like going places. He's like, oh, it's no big deal. He would go on trip, and it's not like, and then like he would mix it up. So it's not like he's like later on when they find out all these flight records and all these flights that he's booked, he's going on family trips. He's going on getaways with his girlfriend. He's going to visit.
his family wedding.
Like he's visiting family. When he drove to Indiana, his mom was there, so he stopped and visited his mom.
His mom and his sisters, I think two of his sisters, they lived in Indiana, and then they got sucked into a cult and moved to Texas. Mm-hmm. So he went to Texas during one of these travels to go to her wedding and also just disappeared for like 4 days after the wedding.
But you think you have this guy who's like always kind of kept to himself, like with that. So if you are like, oh, Israel's coming in for a couple days.
Yeah, they called him Izzy. There?
When everything came out, people were like, no, like you're framing him. Like this is, so you have this guy who's doing all these things. And the question becomes like the man who thinks of everything, how does he get caught?
Yeah.
Because we're talking about him. So we know who he is.
And he also wasn't quiet about his guns or any of that stuff. He openly told his family that he was hiding his guns when he was going. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm going to go hide my guns. And he would go hide them.
And it's not even like some of the times he went, he wasn't even committing murders. He would like rob a bank to buy. He would rob a bank.
He would burn stuff, places like, down. Yeah.
And just like complete chaos. And then he would just fly out. So if I'm a local investigator and, you know, I'm thinking I'm investigating this murder, it's not going to be you hear about like a passerby, but how often do those people get caught? If there's no tie, no evidence, no body, because that's been a big thing. There have been, other than when he was younger, there has been one official body recovered that was like, this is what he did.
This is him. Yeah. I mean, he's tied to a ton of other. There was a guy who disappeared in Texas, just out of his truck one morning. Mm-hmm. He was coming off of his job at 5:30. His name was Jeremy. And he had a hard hat. He wore a white hard hat. He just disappeared. Nobody believed that this guy walked out. It was much like the couriers. This guy doesn't go missing. He's solid. He shows up to work. He does his job. He's like 58 years old. Disappears the same day in that area. A church goes up in flames and everyone goes to that scene. There is cops, all the fire, everyone. And then at that same time, he goes and robs a bank. And you know, you can't tell that it's him, but in the video, he is wearing a white hard hat.
We talked about the Lauren Sperrier case in our Patreon bonus episode last month. And I'll be honest, until I did a deep, because like when I talked about it, I kind of glossed over. I was like, oh yeah, you know, Israel Keyes came through, but I stood by I think that's not what I thought happened.
But it could.
Now that I am as educated about him as I am, and like I have listened to the 40 hours of interrogation, like how he operated, I'm like, holy shit. Like,
yeah, I mean, disappears, that's literally nobody. What he did.
Like, it's,
he stalked out in the early wee morning hours to find people who were alone. And if you happen to be one of those unlucky people, that was.
And
you were that ticket.
He flew in and visited his mom during that time. And it's right before he went to Vermont.
Yep.
It's. But we are going to end it there. We've kind of told you early life. Meg talked about the couriers. And next episode, we're going to talk about how we catch this bastard. I say we because I was part of it.
Because we all caught him.
And well, the sad part is he caught himself. It was him. Like had he remained as meticulous as he was, I don't even think.
No.
It's scary to think about.
But you can't keep it up forever.
No. He idolized Ted Bundy.
Yeah, that was like his, all of those guys, BTK, Ted Bundy, Who's the guy that was Buffalo, that was real Buffalo Bill, that guy? I can't remember.
Yeah. Ed Gein? No.
No, it's, no, it's like James or something.
Yeah. Oof. All right, well.
Let's talk about it in the next episode.
And this is kind of like the PG version, if there is one. Next one, it's not. So we'll give you your easy bit first. We'll see you in a few minutes.
Bye.